What's up, everybody? Welcome to the WPC Plus. I am the Rota Chef Pierre Kim, and with me is Nicholas Scott, and he is not Burt Reynolds. But we're here to talk about fantasy baseball, and I know you might be thinking, what fantasy baseball? But trust me, there's going to be a season, whether you believe the reports or not. We're just going to proceed as if there is. And Nick, here's the thing. Talking about the season, if it happens, then it's going to be short, right? There's not going to be 162 games, maybe 100. Some people talking about maybe 80. How much does that throw things off, though, in terms of fantasy value? Because what we're going to talk about today is plate appearances and fancy new stat that you made up. So even if people aren't digging this deep, what's your first gut take on that as far as how much this changes things? Does it change everything completely, or do you just kind of keep your rankings as they were?
Well, it's two separate things. First is the games, like you said. I think it's going to be a truncated season. I think 100 games, 80 games seems pretty likely. I'm hoping for 100. That would be great. I have more confidence of that, with the recent news of new proposals. So the games doesn't really affect things, just, kind of in a vacuum, because, it's relative to everyone. Everyone's going to be playing the same amount of games. We've talked about before that it's going to help individual players, like mostly, injured players, like guys that we're going to miss April and May and are now basically on the same playing field time-wise, like playing the same amount of games that they would have been if they had been healthy all year. So that won't change things a ton, just the number of games. Where the games are played, that is where projections will really start getting crazy. Not crazy, but just changing. Right now we have kind of three proposals on the books. One of them, the most recent thing they've talked about with the three 10-team divisions that are kind of geographically aligned, that's the only proposal we're talking about where teams would play in their home stadiums. And even then, it's not guaranteed they'd be playing all their, like a normal rotation of stadiums. I think that's probably a tougher proposal to get done than the other two, which one is the all Arizona or the Arizona Florida. I think the like hub system of where they're playing them in Florida, Arizona, Texas, maybe some other warm weather states where teams are grouped around like an area of stadiums and cities. I think that is probably the most likely, seems like the middle ground. And if that happens, you're going to see some big stadium differences. I was writing something on how park factor is going to affect pitchers today, and just straight off the bat, no cores is going to affect a lot of people. It's going to affect projections of everyone in the NL West. It's obviously going to affect all the hitters and all the pitchers of the Rockies. That's one stadium is going to, that will change big things. All the other, all the other quote pitcher parks that go out the window, basically all of the AL East is not going to be used. Four out of five of those teams are decent band boxes. So that'll change projection. Then the other way too, pitcher parks that go away. It's the opposite scenario. So that where games are played, that's going to change projections quite a bit. Games, that'll just kind of relatively mark everyone down.
Yeah, there's so many factors. Depending on which proposal you think might happen or whatever does happen, we're talking about getting rid of ballpark factors basically altogether. Talking about maybe universal DH, expanded rosters, weather. There's just so much to unpack, and we're not going to do that here today because we don't have that kind of time. But no, actually, what we're here today is talk about just the one aspect, which is it's going to be, regardless of where and how they play, it's going to be a short season, right? There's no way they get a full season at this point. So that's going to affect a couple things. So first of all, just less games, less at-bats, less plate appearances for people. But also the way players use might change. And so you came up with something called XPA, and it has a little X in front of it, so we know it's fancy. But obviously plate appearances, right? we know plate appearances are, and how can you possibly make plate appearances fancy? Tell us what you did, and how is this going to help us in fantasy?
Yeah, so first off, my initial pre-XPA was I wanted to be fancy clever and go with little I PA for implied plate appearance. But then I realized that I would lose that fight on Google searches. So decided to go with XPA instead.
It would have been the hoppiest baseball metric out there, though.
By far, you know, Saris would have loved it. That's pretty much all I wanted to do was set off Saris's Google alert he has for IPAs. But so the way I made it fancy is, first off, this is the smart person burden is bore by Tanner Bell, who is the co-writer of The Process. He has a website called smartfantasybaseball.com. He's my like secret guru. I tell him he's my secret guru though, so I don't know if it's a secret anymore. But pretty much anytime I have something on my head baseball wise and think about it for long enough, eventually I will search long enough and find that he wrote about it like 4 years ago. So this is kind of what happened with plate appearances, is that I've been working this year on how to formulate my own projections going forward. And one thing that, you know, it's projections are kind of in, you know, two sets of data, and the player's skills, like how often they will hit home runs or how often they will score runs or steal bases. And then there's the playing time component. And these are you kind of need to do these separately. I think a lot of people work their projections with handling the skill component first. And then as the off season moves along, they can adjust plate appearances, because it's pretty easy to, you know, if you think someone's going to now get 50 more plate appearances, you can do some quick math on per plate appearance rate and bump up that home run total or bump down the home run total, whatever. So what I did what Bell did was, you know, and the question that was bugging me was, everyone knows that, you know, the lower you go down in the lineup, you're going to lose plate appearances. Lots of smart people have done plenty of research on it. You're going to drop about between 0.1 and 0.11 plate appearances per game, which works out to, you know, around 16 plate appearances over the course of a full season. So we know that, but the thing that always bugged me was, how do you account for how good the team is at scoring? You know, how do you tell the difference between what the Yankees leadoff hitter is going to, what he's going to average in plate appearances compared to the Royals leadoff hitter? And, you know, once again, searched long enough, and I found that Tanner Bell had already taken care of this problem a few years ago. And what he did was he took 10 years of data from baseballreference.com, which has lineup data split into batting order. So you can go and you can look at a year and see, go to, you know, back to the Yankees, you can see in 2019, every single stat that was had at 1 through 9. Not the players, just the total amount of stats that came from that batting order. So he took 10 years, 30 teams, 300 downloads of CSVs, which is impressive itself. I did it for a couple of years and just couldn't believe he did it for 10 years. And he did a lot of averaging, and, you know, to, you know, make this short, he came up with, he grouped teams by 50 run increments in what they scored, starting at 549 runs, going up to 950 to 1,000 runs, being like the highest, what I call bins, kind of run bins. And so he could place every team into how many runs they had scored that year, and then average out what their batting order had given them in plate appearances. So all, you know, and he did all the fancy math testing. Like I said, he did the heavy lifting of the calculations in this. I basically just added some stuff and tested some new numbers. But he gave, you know, have a nice little matrix. I can look at it and see, you know, right now that if your team scores between 600 and 649 runs, that your number five hitter is probably going to average around 4.21 plate appearances per game. And this goes all the way up and down through 10 different bins and is shockingly pretty accurate. Like I said, Bell has been very helpful to me. I've reached out to him a number of times on a number of subjects besides this one. And, you know, my first question was, because this was from a couple years ago, I was like, with the new offensive environment, does this need to be updated? Or it was my thinking it did not, just because more runs doesn't really speak to the efficiency of runs, which is what a change in plate appearances per game would mean. It basically just more runs being scored just means that more teams are going to move into those higher run bins, not that more plate appearances are going to come from each spot in the order. So took his numbers, just like redid the research on 2019, 2018, and it's not eerie similar, but it's very similar. You know, it has its misses, but for the most part, it was very accurate in, you know, back testing the numbers I have now and applying to 2019, and, you know, off by a handful, a couple plate appearances, I'll take it. I trust this matrix. It's not perfect. And one thing I will stress is that it is about predicting plate appearances, and it's a very helpful tool in measuring changes. But I think the real strength is that it really tells you what each spot in the order is worth for a given team. And that kind of context is important because, you know, it's hard to say that a player will bat in the same spot before the season every game for all season long. So that's one of those things. It's kind of hard to predict, but what it does is tell you the value. And this helps a lot with how you project players going into the season, depending on how confident you are and where they will bat and how good of offense they're playing for. But it also tells you, you know, how big the changes would be. You know, how much does it matter if, you know, I recently wrote about Victor Robles. How much does it matter if he bats first instead of fifth or instead of seventh? Like, not only how much does it matter in plate appearances, but how much does it translate to the actual, like, counting stats we care about in fantasy? So had Bell's Matrix, needed a couple other things to get to what we call XPA. So need the lineup order. I tried to keep myself out of this, not making a lot of decisions. You know, the research from Bell is, you know, that's neutral, 10 years worth of data. Like, that's not him. That's just what the numbers are saying. And I tried to keep that in line so we had some neutral context. So I used Fangraphs, just roster resource, what they have everyone projected for currently. And this is not perfect because, like I said, not everyone's going, lineups are very fluid, some lineups more fluid than others, but also, you know, roster resource doesn't have everyone, like, it doesn't have every person that's going to be a platoon player listed as a starter. So they just have them listed on the bench. So it's not perfect there. And what I did was I didn't change all the bench players. I didn't change all of them. The more tenuous ones, the ones we don't really care about so much in fantasy, I wasn't going to try and guess where they are going to bat. But the more fantasy relevant players, like Ryan Braun, for example, is listed as on the bench. I know that Ryan Braun is not going to be just a bench player. So you went through and tinkered with some of those guys, just giving them a batting order of where I thought they would generally bat. I was pretty conservative on it. So then once I had batting order, I have how much their team scores, or I need how much their team scores to see what kind of run bin I put them in, to see what each spot in the lineup is going to average. So what I did was I, once again, tried to I didn't want to just pick a couple projection systems and lean heavily on a couple. So I took six. I took Pacoda and Steamer, a couple Steamer Steamer variations and depth charts and Rasball, and then ATC and the Bat. Weighted them so that Steamer wasn't overrepresented, and then just looked at projected runs and gave each team a projected run total according to what the projections were calling for. Averaged that out. So then I could take every team and put them in their little bin. You know, the lowest bin is 500 to 549 runs, bin A. There's nobody in that. I think this year bin B is the lowest, but I think it might, I think it's C. Yeah, it is. Guess who's in C? Pierre. That's right, it's Miami.
The Marlins. Yeah. I would expect F, so, but, you know.
Florida. C. They're really good. They're really moving on up. So, you know, so now I have, you know, in addition to all what the different projection systems have individually, I also have an average. So that's what I use for my XPA. So now I got, I know what kind of, you know, I know what kind of offense they have. I know where the players are going to bat. So now I can take that information, take it right over to Bell's Matrix and say, oh, hey, you're batting second for the Milwaukee Brewers. I had the Milwaukee Brewers in this run bin. I am going to say your XPA is this, and so on and so forth. So then you just get a, you get a big bag of numbers that, and you can compare them to the actual projected plate appearance and parse out the differences and see who is under and over projected and why. And kind of in general, what I saw is that, so the projection systems are a lot more conservative with batters in the top third of the order, and especially and particularly batters in the top third of the order who are projected to score a lot of runs. So they underproject those guys, overproject according to XPA with guys in the bottom third of the order, particularly on guys in on bad teams. So I think he's number one in overprojected, but Malik Smith is a good example. Projected to bat ninth for the Mariners right now. Mariners are projected to, I think they're the average fourth lowest scoring team. So his numbers are not great compared to what the systems are calling for. I can pull him up right here, and he is at, yeah, so on average, the XBA has him at 504 plate appearances. His average plate appearances for those projection systems is 545. And he ranges, you know, down from, Dota has him at 455. The highest mark is depth charts, who has him at 588. That is a significant swing. And so XBA is there to kind of tell you this is what he should hit on a team offense like the Mariners if they score that way. Like I said, there's a lot of variable. Like, you don't know how often a player will change in a lineup spot. And I can say the Mariners are going to be a bad offense and that everyone seems to think they're going to be a bad offense, but it's baseball. And maybe they won't be. So that's going to change a lot of things. Like I said, this is more about like putting a value on the lineup spot. And, you know, we talk a lot about in fantasy, so-and-so is projected to hit here different from last year. This means I should give him a big boost in value, or this means I should take a bunch of value away. And this is kind of a check on your premises here of what are you really saying when you say Victor Robles will get only 650 plate appearances if he bats leadoff? You're saying that the Nationals offense is really, really bad because leadoff hitters generally do really well. And, but Nationals is one of those sneaky teams. Sneaky, not projected to score a lot of runs team. They scored the sixth most runs in baseball last year. And their numbers are nowhere near that coming into this year. Pacoda hates them, has them as the 23rd most runs all the other systems have them between, like, I think like 9th and 12th. But, you know, Nationals players are being projected for plate appearances like it was still last year. And so what XBA is kind of, it helps find market inefficiencies in that regard.
Well, that's interesting. Well, first of all, for all that, I think I need an IPA because that's a lot of numbers floating around. No, but that's a good point. I mean, obviously Rendon gone, but, you know, the Nationals kind of overachieved from what we expected last year. And you do have a guy like Robles who's still young and could take that step forward. They got a stud in Soto. You know, that's one good example. Let's first of all talk about, well, actually let me show people what we're talking about, because this is available on, of course, rotoballer.com. So let me show everybody your article that just put out. It was a couple of days ago, I believe it was. So make this nice and big for everyone to see. So first of all, I was introducing XPA. So a lot of what we just talked about, and it breaks it down into detail. Projected lineup spot. Here's the bins you're talking about, the projected team runs, right? A through J. Mm-hmm. And then we talk about some of the people as far as expected plate appearances, and there you see the biggest differences under and over. So there's Malik Smith, of course, there at the top, and then down at the bottom, then we have the opposite, right? So before we talk about the players, I have a couple of questions for you. Mm-hmm. So first of all, you talked about platoons. Now we know, if we can assume that there's like a lefty-righty platoon, you know, first base or something, we could probably kind of figure out maybe it's like a 60-40 split or something. How do you account for, or do you account for, a guy who's like a utility player who, like you said, not expected or projected, you know, like on roster resource or whatever, to be, you know, in the starting lineup, but a guy who might play 5-6 times a week in a normal season? I'm thinking of a guy, maybe this fits the bill right there in St. Louis, like a Tommy Edman, right? He's not necessarily going to hold down an outfield spot every single day, right? He's not maybe going to, you know, play the infield every day. He's going to be all over the place. The Dodgers always have a guy they like to play all over the place. So in the end, those plate appearances might wind up being almost equivalent to, you know, a full-time starter. But this is also a guy who, not just playing around the diamond, but also a guy who might bat second one day and might bat fifth another day. I mean, is there any way to even account for that?
Right now, it like in the off season, that's a lot to, like, those guys, like, you have to make some, you know, reasonable guesses on, like I was saying, you know, going in and filling in those guys who are listed as benches, as bench spots. I'm going to be doing more work on this that, you know, as we get into the season and things will start leveling out. And I think this, you know, I think this has a lot of weekly value as well. And once you kind of figure out how teams are using their lineups and getting to a kind of rotation. But even in those cases where you don't exactly know the lineup spot, knowing how much the team runs affect each lineup spot's average plate appearances per game is a really big tool, I think. Like, having a handle on, you know, having a handle on the fact that the Angels are projected this year, most systems have them as a lot better offense than you probably think. And you may not need to know exactly how, you know, what percent of games, you know, say Tommy La Stella is going to spend at the top of the order, but you kind of, once you have a better understanding, look at the numbers and see, like, oh man, that this is the difference we get when a team scores this many more runs. Like, this is, you know, if Tommy La Stella were to, you know, looking at XPA again, I think. He's under projected by like 63 plate appearances, but XPA still only has him at 470 plate appearances. But the Angels offense is so, you know, projected so highly, top 10 by most systems, number 4 by Pota, which is kind of crazy, I think. But just getting in your head, like, you need to, like, bad offenses, you need to knock down those plate appearances some when you're thinking. Like, even with the guy, like you mentioned, Edman on the Cardinals. I am not very optimistic. I feel like I'm always a negative Cardinals fan, even though I'm a total sycophant. I'm not very high on their offense this year. And, you know, the projection systems kind of agree with me there. So I worry about a guy like Edmund, because, you know, I'm not going to worry as much about where he's bouncing around in the lineup right now. What I'm worrying about is the fact that I don't think they're going to score a lot of runs, and I don't think where he bats is going to make a monster difference until, you know, the Cardinals prove they score more runs. It's like, that's kind of that can be a bigger driver.
Okay, so that makes sense. So it's not so much about worrying that we know exactly where in the lineup they're going to hit all the time, you know, even if it doesn't change that often. It's more about team context. And I think that's a great point. Listel is a guy I remember mentioning, you know, 3 months ago, whatever it is, as a sleeper back when we thought it was draft season. But just remember, I mean, it's kind of intuitive. Like, oh, well, if he hits at the top of the lineup, you know, ahead of Mike Trout and Anthony Rendon, that's good for him, right? He should score more runs. And even if he's not going to hit, you know, home runs like he did last year, he's still a guy who I would want, as opposed to if he was hitting at the top of the Tigers lineup, you know? So it makes sense. But I guess what this does, this is breaking it down in more detail and I guess making us more aware that it does matter more than we would think, right? Because there's a lot of guys who you say, oh, well, he's batting leadoff. Okay, but not all leadoff batters are created equal. My next question here is, I think it's pretty obvious. We know, let's say, the leadoff batter for the Yankees is going to be better than the leadoff batter for the Royals, like you said, but how big a difference is there? A lot of times people say, well, okay, Gleyber Torres or Mike Tauchman or whoever it is, somebody hitting, you know, seventh for the Yankees, is he still being in that lineup going to be more valuable than whoever hits leadoff or, you know, number two for the Royals, because that lineup is so much better? Or does the difference in plate appearances make up for that? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it kind of, in your example, just to use that direct one, it's kind of easy to, you know, you look at the little matrix, and I have, let's see, the Yankees are in bin eight, so their number seven hitter would be averaging 4.16 plate appearances per game, and the Royals, I believe, are in D, and their leadoff hitter is, you know, 4.62. So it's quite a, you know, it's still a significant advantage for the Royals batter. That's about what, half a plate appearance per game. So 80-ish over the course of a season. So that it's very situational. And that's what I like about this. You can make like very quick comparisons about teams that score this many runs versus a team that scores this many runs, and see where the overlap occurs, and, you know, kind of where the value switches. Yeah, I think that's it.
All right, so let's talk about a couple of players here. Going back to the article, and I'll point out, let's start with the top here. We talked about Malik Smith already, Amed Rosario, and now I noticed that some of these guys, Luis Robert, even. Talk about some of these guys who might be targeted for their speed. D. Gordon, I see also there too. And if you notice there, the runs rank, right? A lot of these guys projected basically to be at the bottom of the order. So maybe the opportunities won't be there. But do you still think that if we're talking about maybe the counting stats won't be there as much, runs, and do you still think that the speed is enough that you can still target those guys just because stolen bases are so important, you know, so lacking these days?
For me, yes, just, you know, I'm pretty heavy on the stolen base is a quickly diminishing resource. You need to address it, and guys like that are always going to be valuable. I talked about in my Robles article that just went out about, you know, of the four systems that I looked at in that article, ATC, the bat, depth charts, and steamer, only think everyone, none of them projected more than six players to steal more than 30 bases. That is significant. And, you know, Robles was projected by all of them to score or to steal around 30, 31 bases. So I am a strong believer in diminishing resources. So guys like that, I think we'll have plenty of value. I think the problem lies is when you, if you want Luis Robert and you can draft him as assuming he will be in that, you know, where he's projected to now, bat eighth, I think. But the problem is when you start drafting people like they're going to move up the lineup, like I think Malik Smith and Robert are two big examples of that, where their draft price kind of says that people believe that they will be taking over that lineup spot and, you know, subsequently improve all their, have all their rate stats go up. But once again, it kind of depends on the team. Robert, I am fine with, because White Sox have a great offense. They have a much better offense than you probably realize. I know they've gotten a ton of hype this offseason, but all the protection systems love them. They have a great lineup, and I'm going to write something about it later about the same kind of thing I did with Robles, but talking about whether Robert will be able to move, the chances of him moving up. I like his chances of moving up to lead off at some point a lot better than I do Robles, just because the White Sox don't have Trey Turner batting leadoff. They have Tim Anderson, who had, I think, 357 on base percentage last year, but the highest he's had before that is like around 300. Tim Anderson is not, I don't think he can hold off that job for long. So I like Robert a lot more in that instance. Malik Smith, on the other hand, yeah, I love the speed. He's going to steal a ton of bases. But if he can't get to the top of the order of that, what I think is going to be a pretty bad Seattle offense, like, you can only steal so many bases if you're not on base, and you only get on base when you come up to the plate. And batting ninth on what's projected to be one of the lowest scoring offense in baseball, it's going to be hard to get that done. But, you know, to your question, yeah, I'm always a sucker for I'm not a sucker for Malik Smith. I'm not going to draft him probably. But I have Rope, even though I don't think Robles, you know, that was my conclusion in the article. I don't think it's likely that he spends a majority of time at leadoff. But I've drafted him on plenty of teams. I think I have him on, I think I have him in TGFBI. But I'll take those 30 stolen bases, because I think he's going to steal those even if he's at fifth or sixth.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy, obviously, 2020 potential. And you say the same thing, you know, with Robert, even if he doesn't steal a ton of bases, he's got some power to go with it, you know, 20 homer potential. You know, Malik Smith has 2 homer potential. That's probably his ceiling. So that's a lot. You're paying literally for just one stat. And then that's the thing. I'm probably not owning any Mariners this year. I think that might actually be the worst offense in all the majors.
I don't know if I have any. I've been trying to sit here and think of, I'm not sure I have a single Mariner. And I'm not sure that's going to change, because I don't have high hopes.
You also got here
I have Chet Long.
You do? That's pretty brave of you. I mean, you can see right there, Malik Smith, of course, at the top. Evan White, assuming he's, you know, kind of an everyday player. Third on your list, D. Gordon. We already got, you know, a third of their starting lineup right there in the list for possible overachievers. Now, let's talk about some guys. You talk about the top 25 players that XPA likes to have more appearances than projection systems. So some underrated guys. There's a Cardinal first. Colton Wong, I agree, he's kind of an underrated value. He can get you some steals. Not a ton, but, I mean, he's got some speed there and can hit for average. So if he does hit at the top of the lineup, even if the Cardinals aren't an amazing offense, as you're saying, that's still not a bad place to be. Stella, we've talked about Kepler. I do like that.
One of my favorites.
Number 4, Brandon Lau, Tampa Bay, because I think he's going totally under the radar. Had a pretty decent rookie season. He's got some power. If he's at the top of the lineup, that's pretty good too. Lineup that could be slightly better than last year. And I don't know. I feel like he's kind of getting disrespected this year based on what he did.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he has some issues, some whiffery issues, some on-base issues, but I like him as a player a lot. What I don't like is Tampa Bay. They are just, true, with every year that goes by, I don't avoid Tampa Bay players. I build with them in Dynasty all the time, but as soon as they get good, I trade them, because Tampa Bay cannot be relied upon. They are going to take every single little advantage and split advantage that they can find. And trying to pencil in someone to bat leadoff or bat second for them the entire year is just a tough hurdle to get past. And Tampa Bay can be very frustrating players to own. I think Lau he's in one of those positions. There are a lot of guys on Tampa Bay I like, but the mixing and matching they do week to week can be absolutely infuriating.
Yeah, and I feel like they have like 10 middle infielders too. So
yeah, bro, and they have like three guys named Lau or Lowe. There's another one coming up in minors that's better than the previous two, Josh and Brandon.
Two of them are brothers, and one is not. Isn't that what it is? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
You mentioned some other guys. I love Kepler. That's one of those things where, like I said, projection systems tend to be, compared to XBA, they tend to be more conservative on top of the order bats, particularly on top of the order bats on good offenses. And this is one of those things where, like, Kepler's going to be the leadoff batter. And Minnesota is still projected to be a really awesome offense, just like they were last year. They're not projected to be number one. Let me pull it up real quick here. I think they average out to at number two. Like, Pakota, second. ATC, fourth. Bat, third. Depth, third. Razzball, fourth. Steamer, second. Anything can happen in baseball, but everyone loves Minnesota to score a ton of runs. Max Kepler is batting leadoff. And sometimes, like, it's as simple as connecting those dots for me. Like, this guy who I already like, just as a player, wherever he's batting, is batting leadoff, and he's batting leadoff on one of the highest scoring teams. Like, I will take the over on what he's projected plate appearance wise.
And good example there, you're talking about Minnesota, because Kepler, and even in Minnesota as a team, even if they don't hit as many home runs as they did last year, which they probably won't, Kepler is really good at taking a walk. If he's at the top of the lineup, I mean, that alone gives him value, even if the power, you know, regresses a little bit. But in that same team there, Miguel Sano, guy we've talked about before, if he's at the bottom of the lineup, that, you know, kind of limits his upside. I mean, even if he does, you know, hit however many home runs, it, you know, the lack of counting stats relative to other guys, you know, Kepler might wind up being more valuable as a 25 homer guy, you know, hypothetically, than Snow would be at a 35 homer guy because of those differences in terms of runs and RBIs. And there's the whiffery too.
Absolutely. And yeah, that's one of the things I've really liked about, you know, running through this research and doing all this stuff, is it helped me confront my own cognitive biases. Like, we've talked about Snow before. I really like Miguel Sano, like, a lot, but it kind of lets me know. And, you know, before I did all this, it's like, I love Sano the player. I love Minnesota the offense. Yeah, he's batting seventh, but it'll be fine. The quality of the offense is going to outweigh him batting lower in the order. And you run the numbers and you see that there's a balance there. And, you know, even on the best, you know, you mentioned seventh on the Yankees, like, there's a balance. And, you know, you get in that bottom third and the numbers really go down, and you can't hit massive moonshot home runs like Sano does unless you actually get up the bat. I talked about another guy in, I think, the introducing XBA article. Another guy that I touted is Brandon Nimmo, and it's because they've named him their leadoff batter. I've talked about my reasons for why I don't think he's going to be in really any sort of timeshare, because they don't want Conforto to play center field because he's terrible, and they don't want Jake Mriznick to play center field because he has a great club, but he can't hit more than like 100. So, like, I'm pretty confident he's going to be their primary center fielder. Like, yeah, they named him leadoff. I like the skills. Boom. Like, why are we only projecting him to bat 550 or, you know, whatever it was? I bumped him way up. And then I do the numbers on here, and, you know, never underestimate how bad the Mets can be and how much they can hurt your fantasy team. And that's kind of what you learned. It's like, the Mets offense is not projected to be very good. You know, they're not like Seattle bad, but, you know, they're looking here, Everyone has them above 22, 21 or higher, except for the highest is Pecota at 16. And then there's a 19. And everything else is 21st and 22nd in run scoring. I love Nimmo at first. I still like him. You know, he's on the under-projected list. You know, his XPA is around 50 more than what the projection systems were calling for. But it wasn't the 600-plus that I thought was going to come out of him batting leadoff. And that's just kind of like the cold reality of, like, I can love Nimmo all I want, but if the Mets don't score more runs, he's not going to reach, you know, X amount of plate appearances.
True. There you go. And that's why you do the like you said, run those cold, hard numbers, because numbers don't lie. And, you know, all of this, like I said, we lie about the numbers, but the numbers themselves. there's Nimmo right there in the middle of that list. But again, guys, see all of this right there. You got the introducing XP article. So far, you've gone into detail on Victor Robles, like you mentioned. Who else you got next? I'm sure you're going to go into detail about any more players. Who's at least on deck?
Robert is going to be next. I'm also going to do Malik Smith. Probably Jesse Winker as well. He's another one that's got, he's listed as a bench player. Akiyama, the most recent Japanese player to come over and sign with the Reds, he's listed as first. Akiyama better hit and he better get on base, because Winker can do both. And he has pretty outstanding on base numbers, and he seems like a really great leadoff hitter. And so he's one of those guys that, he's listed on the bench now, but, you know, I'll probably start with just plugging him in with, what if he hit leadoff? Okay. This is because the Reds are projected as a pretty decent offense, like in that, like they're like mid range in that 15-16 range, but leadoff is once again a pretty good spot. And so I'll dive a little deeper into him. I know he's a favorite sleeper of a couple people in the industries, and I like him too. I wish I had a little more exposure to him, just because that's a tough thing. I'm not going to pretend like I'm some Japanese baseball expert. So I don't know what Akiyama is going to do. I know what some smart people have told me he's going to do. I've watched him swing a few times. Like, I've seen his contract. I'm sure he'll be fine, but I like Winker. So I'll dive into that a little more. Like I said, Robert, Smith, and then that's about it probably in that line. And I have a couple other directions I want to go using the stat. And by the time I get done with those, hopefully we'll have an official announcement of baseball and I can throw out everything I've done and adjust it to 80 games and brand new projections. So that'll be great.
But that will be the best day of the year probably. When
oh my God, I'll be so happy to do it. I'll be like, cool, got to throw away everything I've done for 3 months. Whatever, I'll do it.
Light it up. Throw it in the fire. There you go. That's a good point with Akiyama. Like you said, projected, you know, leadoff. Winker could very easily take that job. I know some people have said he's more of a glove first guy, but they didn't bring him over to sit on the bench either. So, we'll see what happens. But all this great information and all those articles you just mentioned, those deep player dives coming out on Rotoballer. So check those out. And we're going to be back again probably next week. Dig a little deeper into something else. You'll have, I'm sure, a brand new X stat for us, right? You got XPA, XOPS. What else can we X up?
X my haircut.
It's killing
my Corona
you.
Cut. Oh man, it doesn't bother me as much. Whatever, I don't go anywhere, so you know my kids don't care if I look like a hobo. But a couple nights ago, we were eating dinner, and my wife, who at the beginning of all of this said something about my hair, and she's like, well, we better open up soon because I'm not going to try and cut it. Like, I can't do that. But then it's apparently got long enough, because a couple nights ago at dinner, she just kind of looked up at me out of sudden and gave me the look and goes, what are we going to do about that hair? And she's like, I could probably do it. I'm like, oh, okay. So one of these weeks, we're probably going to open up and my hair will be more creative. We'll
creative. We'll see. That's a good way. You're gonna break out the Flowbee and do the Do you remember
Oh
that?
man, I wish I had one. Yeah, that'd be so great. I let her do that in a second. I let my kids try with
Okay, we're gonna record that. We need a live stream of that, the Flowbee
that.
in action.
Oh yeah. Like we get one of those, like, oh yeah, everyone line up and try to cut my hair. I don't care.
All right, you're there. You go, promising the Flowbee live stream. All right, go viral. All right, no, actually, we'll be back. We'll actually talk baseball. There you go. Check out all that content we talked about on Road to Baller, a couple of articles on XPA right now, more coming, and more podcast information coming. That's right, WPC Plus. All right, guys, thanks for watching.
Thanks.